5 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour. Welcome back to the whole show, powered by PDC Energy. The White Sox are up over the Astros 1-0 in the top of the third. Houston leads the series 2-1. So White Sox trying to make it very, very interesting. Coming up at 3:15, Brewers and the Braves. Atlanta leads that series 2-1. It was a crazy night in baseball last night, too. Oh, and tonight, of course, is 7 o'clock, Giants and Dodgers. San Francisco leads that series 2-1 as well. Celebrating their 10th anniversary on the Rocks, Liquor brings us our game beer of the week. Samuel Adams hooking us up, Oktoberfest. See, I know that one. I know that one. Pick up selections from Sam Adams or any of your favorite adult beverages. You can use the drive-thru if you want. They're open until midnight. That's on the Rocks Liquor. Every single night, that drive-thru is open until midnight. They've also got the Fridays between 4 and 6. They got their spirit tastings. This one's from Molly Brown Spirits out of Denver. That's on the Rocks Liquor. And apparently, I don't know anything about ordering drinks, Colfax. You ever see the movie Cocktail with Tom Cruise? That could not be me. Could never be that guy. You haven't seen Cocktail? That should have been one of our summer of 90s movies reviews when we did that in the COVID year. He's going to law school or something?
No, I did see that. And he goes down to like a beach.
Made me want to do that. And then I realized I couldn't do that. That's too much pressure.
I didn't like that movie.
You didn't? It's like the first half was really good. Because I think he's going to law school. And to put himself through law school, he starts working at a bar and he likes the bar scene and he's learning all these tricks and there's this Australian dude that's like his mentor that teaches him all this stuff. He's doing fun things, and everybody comes. It's like Coyote Ugly, but it's Tom Cruise and that guy. So he learns all this stuff, and then his friend kind of screws him over by getting with his girlfriend. And then Tom Cruise says, "I'm out of here, man." And then he goes to the beach, and he's a bartender there, and then that's that.
Yeah. I didn't like that movie.
It kind of fizzled. My point being, I would suck at that job because you got people ordering drinks. Dude, I don't know. Like, I was messing with you guys with the La Creme ice cream stuff, but the grasshopper drink. Like, I've never had that before. It's just a mint alcoholic drink, right?
Yeah, it's like a mint chocolate-flavored drink.
I just don't. I guess I'm pretty much like, I order a beer or some kind of whiskey relatively cheap. Like, I don't get the, I just can't do that thing, you know? And, like, I tried. I hosted Brew Talk forever, and I think the reason they wanted me to do Brew Talk was because I didn't know anything, so I would ask all the stupid questions that everybody was afraid to ask. But I taste a beer, and all these guys would be like, yeah, the nose of it's really good, or the body, or the, you know this, Colfax, you're a beer guy. And I'm like, sitting here wanting to do that with you guys, but I'm like, it's a weird aftertaste. It's good. It's bad. It's not as good.
You know, that's all you really need in the end. Do you like it or do you not like it?
Do you like it or do you not like it? Sometimes that's how it goes down. But yeah, I'm so blind when it comes to that side of it. But I do know that I like Sam Adams Oktoberfest. You know, that's
solid.
I'll order that this time of year, anytime. Eastside Chris, does Urban get a hall pass? Should he be fired because of all that stuff? Has enough time gone? It feels like enough time has gone from it, but didn't they just get their kicked the other day? Like, it feels like he should be on a hotter seat. I know, jokes are coming, I'm sure. But at the same time, with all the Gruden stuff at this stage, they lost to Tennessee 37-19. They're, 0-5. Do you look at the situation and say he should get a hall pass? Should he get to finish the year? Do you think that Gruden is long for this thing? And I don't know if it's just because of all the Gruden stuff right now. It kind of feels like it was a big deal, and it is a big deal. Tony Dungy talked about it on Sunday night and said, the fact that this man did not get on the plane home to go with this team, right there alone is big enough for me to get pretty upset. It's big enough for a team to get pretty upset. And, you know, Drew Brees kind of tried to go on and say, no, it's on the players no matter what. You know, they're playing for each other. It's the coaches. And I liked how Dungy kind of fought back on that. If you guys watched it Sunday night, Dungy's like, yeah, but the coach is paid to run this thing. The coach is paid to lead this thing and lead by example. So in light of the Gruden stuff, it's still the same bad look that it was last week. It's just not as bad. So does somebody else's bad activity, worse activity, make your bad activity acceptable? 0-5, he threw Trevor Lawrence under the bus on Sunday. He said, my quarterback, you know, Trevor doesn't really know how to do quarterback. He's not comfortable doing quarterback sneaks yet. That's what he said. Trevor Lawrence was asked about it, and he looked directly at the camera or the reporter and said, I'm comfortable doing sneaks. So, I mean, you just threw your quarterback under the bus. What's new, Herb? So I don't... Winning cures everything, but if that doesn't happen soon, in light of everything, do you think Urban Meyer's the guy for the future? Can he recover from this? I don't know. My gut tells me no, but that might the losing might just lead you to that point. Anyway, Mysterio. Sounds like that is what Gruden and Urban Meyer are living right now, Oktoberfest. The reason I get quiet sometimes is I want to proofread some of these texts because I don't have time to read them all, but sometimes I want to read them because I don't know what you guys are going to say. Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. Sometimes it's rated R. Sometimes they're just flat out mean. Noob, Elizabeth Shue is hot. She was in that movie. Dynamite drop in by Noob right there. Susan and Cheryl love that. Elizabeth Shue was in The Boys. Did you see that? Well, just recently. She was in that. She was great. She's great in everything that she does. She made a... Spoiler alert. Okay, enough time has passed. She made a couple of appearances in Cobra Kai. Yes, Cobra Kai was fantastic. Did I just mess that up for you, Colfax? Okay. When is that coming out, by the way? Like, December? It's October. So we're like 2 months away. I'm really excited for that. Let's get that thing going. That was fantastic. It's funny. Dungy hated when Meyer did, but stood up for Gruden on Sunday night. Makes sense. I think, and I don't know that he stood up. Did he stand up that obviously for Gruden? I watched that. I'm just trying to think of what all he said. But that was before everything else came out, too. Not to say that the first comment that we know he said was acceptable. My guess is you are looking at, okay, I think that there are some apologists for Gruden that were saying this was a bad example of him being really mad and saying something really stupid. Whether you want to excuse that or not, whatever. But when you start seeing email after email after email, and not all of them are racist remarks. Some are sexist remarks, misogynistic remarks, homophobic remarks. Some were just about Roger Goodell not being good at his job. Some were just bad. So I think when you looked at the body of those emails and then the trend and all of it together, which maybe they haven't even seen them all, you started to go, this guy is maybe not good for the NFL, which apparently deep down he wasn't. We all know outwardly for the longest time, Gruden was very good for the NFL. You know, as a head coach, as a caricature, the Chucky thing, Monday Night Football, coming back to the Raiders, like that was all a very positive thing for the NFL. But this kind of stuff, it was the right choice. I mean, again, I haven't even seen the emails yet, and maybe these emails come out and change our minds, but from what we're hearing and some of the stuff that's leaking so far, it just seems like this was the absolute right choice. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043, 888-530-0043. I was at the game on Saturday for Colorado State and San Jose State, and the attendance was booming, man. I mean, it was, what does that hold? I think they say 36,000 is the capacity. Standing room only, though, is like 41, and I don't know that they really broadcast that. I think they just say 36, because the Oregon State game was 37, so obviously there was some standing room going on there. But it was magnificent. It was a great environment. You know, you had, 34,780 fans. That was the fourth largest in Canvas Stadium's history. And again, they don't have a long history. They started back in 2017. It's the eighth in program history, though. So that's significant. There are a couple of reasons why you can say, okay, it's not just about the last 3 weeks, because the last 3 weeks have been very good for CSU, as opposed to the first 2 weeks that were just colossally awful for this team. It's homecoming. It's also post-COVID stadium. I know we're still in COVID, but it's post-COVID stadium, meaning people can go to games and stuff, and they can sit next to each other and act like human beings. So was it that? Was it people desperate to get out and go to something? Was it a mix of all of those things? I believe the true test will not be this year. Maybe not even next year. But I look at this ultimately, and I ask this question, because I'm looking at the trends. Look at these numbers here. Mike Bobo started in 2015. And so we were building on with Jim McElwain, because Jim McElwain was there 12, 13, and 14. And he was growing it. You know, in 2012, they averaged 19,000 at Hughes. In 2013, they averaged 18,000. I believe that was McElwain's first year. No. That was his second year. His third year was 2014. That's when they were cooking. That's when he was really building the momentum. They won 10 games. They went to the Las Vegas Bowl. And, you know, you're thinking, wow, McElwain's great. And then he leaves. They were 6-0 at home that year. So they were undefeated at home. And they averaged 26,000 fans. And they hit a 32,546 when they played Utah State. Bobo enters in 2015. They go 7-6, 24,000. 27,000 is next year. They go 7-6, but 5-1 at home. 2017 was the very first year at Canvas Stadium. I was at that game, that Oregon State game, and that place was bumping. You played a Pac-12 team. Capacity is 36. It was standing room, 37,583. That year, you averaged 32,000. So the fans were there. And you go 7-6 with Bobo the first year. All right. Bobo, as a rookie head coach, as his first head coaching job, he was the offensive coordinator for Georgia when he came over. And you're thinking, all right, this is going to be a strong deal here. And then you were hearing the talks about the Big 12, you know, moving on to a Power 5 conference, all these things. And then 2018 happens. Second year in the new stadium, Mike Bobo gets sick with that peripheral neuropathy that was just rough for him and his family. He missed portions of the preseason, kept him from calling plays for the first few games of the year in constant pain. And the team, you know, for whatever reason after that, just never really responded. So they won three games that year. After such a strong start at the stadium, they won three games. So you saw the attendance go from 32 average to 29. And then the next year, Bobo's feeling better, but more of the same. They win four games, so you dropped from 29,000 to 23,000. And then 2020, we do not have a record of that because they didn't count just the media members that were in the press box. It's like eight. So I think if you put that number up there, you'd be like, what the hell happened that year? You know, were there emails that were found or something? So no, everybody boycotted the game. So this year so far, they're averaging around 31,000. They have three more home games left. If you really get a showing, you could really rock that place. So if you look at this, just the last from McElwain to now, it doesn't take a rocket surgeon. Is that a real thing? A rocket surgeon? Something like that. To figure out that winning will bring the fans. My question is, can Canvas Stadium and Colorado State, can anybody, but specifically here, do what the Broncos have done? And I'm not asking for 74,000, 76,000 people. I'm asking for the treatment of win or lose, that place is fun to go. We're going to go watch a Broncos game. They've created this amazing following, and it is the sport in the state of Colorado. I've had this debate about the Nuggets. I've had this debate about the Rockies. Rockies Coors Field. I mean, people love going there. It's outside. You know, I mean, it's a great, just nice to be there, Colfax. Don't have to win. But they've developed it because it's a fun spot to be. So, yes, everybody's tweeting at me and responding to the question saying the same thing. You know, hey, the wins solve everything. The wins will come. And I agree. You have to build that tradition. I need to see Steve Addazio this year. Five wins. I need to see five. I think they could actually eke out maybe six to get to a bowl game. Maybe. Based on what I've seen the last 3 weeks. Then I got to see next year. I need to see another step. I need to see you compete in the Mountain West. Maybe the next year you're winning a title. Maybe the fourth year you're recycling some guys, you got a quarterback injured or whatever, and you have a down year and you win five games. Then you rebound. You know what I'm saying is it's not always going to be winning seasons. So I don't want to get to the point where it's like we have a fickle following where you got to win at least seven games a year for me to go there. I do agree you have to develop a culture of winning before I'm going to spend $60, $80, $100 plus beer, plus parking, all of that for me to invest my time. But I want Canvas and the traditions to ultimately grow to the point where I'm there and I'm having a blast. It's a great place to bring my family or catch up with the fellas. You know, my wife goes out for ladies' night or something. Canvas Stadium's popping. And that's my question. Can you really grow this thing to that level? Noob. Has anyone checked on Dixon after that 18-point loss by the Chiefs? Chiefs are in a bad spot right now. A little scary. The ref. Go ahead and crack on John Gruden if you want. He deserves it. However, DeMaurice Smith's response to John's apology should tell you all you need to know about the NFL. I thought I read that. Elaborate, the ref, if you would, because I'd like to get your thoughts on that. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. He says the one response I saw was he basically just said the fight against racism is not over. He took to Twitter and said the email from John Gruden and some of the reaction to it confirms that the fight against racist intolerance is not over. This is not about an email as much as it is about pervasive belief by some that people who look like me can be treated as less, Smith started off. The email has also revealed why the comments by some with powerful platforms to explain this away are insidious and hypocritical. It is as if there is a need to protect football above the values of equality, inclusion, and respect. Is that what you're talking about, the ref? I mean, are you saying that this is the NFL? Like, this is, it's not just Gruden, that it's the NFL. Like, there's a lot going on. I would imagine so. John Gruden is one of your big-time guys. He is one of your celebrities. And then this comes out. This is a bad look. It's a bad day, to be honest with you, because whether you like didn't really like Gruden or you did like Gruden, you liked him or you loved to hate him. He was entertaining. He was good for the NFL. And then it proves underneath that maybe he was kind of bad for the NFL. Maybe what's wrong with a lot of things going on as far as what we're discussing. And again, we've talked about some politics and sports on this show throughout the years. I'm not going to beat you over the head with that stuff. But there are certain things where I just look at it and I say, I mean, come on. You have to draw the line somewhere. And those emails, that nastiness, the fact that it was overlooked by Raiders ownership, it does say some interesting things about what's happening in the NFL. 24 minutes after the hour. Let's take a short break. Power to Play Sports poll question is still rolling. Who's the best quarterback in the NFL right now? Is it Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, or Tom Brady? Go vote at thewholeshow.com. It's The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy, live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. We'll be right back.
Northern Colorado's voice and the leader in prep sports is 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. The Good Afternoon Guy with Brian Gary. Weekday afternoons at 3 on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, Nugget fans. This is Coach Bowen of the Denver Nuggets, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back to The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios, and it's interesting. You know, we've had, and I'm gonna break here. We're gonna talk to Mike Brohard coming up next. I want to talk about that atmosphere Saturday, that homecoming atmosphere, and the win the Rams delivered in that process. You know, I've had a few people say things, and I've seen it on Twitter, and you know, as far as the Gruden stuff, it's like, well, why is Deshaun Watson still? Well, first off, it is. You know, as far as the legal terms, Gruden resigned. So it's not like, you know, he did not get fired. He resigned. Was it going to go that way? More than likely. It sure feels like it. There's been the questions, though, why are guys like Deshaun Watson allowed to still be in the NFL? Well, first off, Deshaun Watson's situation is still being under investigation. I'll bet you if they found some emails of him talking about women in an interesting way, you would sure hope that it would be the same. I don't know. That's what I would hope. But his situation is being investigated as far as the, 23 women? And again, all that stuff comes to fruition and it's true, then you are absolutely moving on from Deshaun Watson and you're scraping him away from all of your memories at the Texans facility. There are circumstances, though, where there are guys that have seemingly done a little bit worse and been convicted of worse that are still playing. I mean, what Michael Vick did was illegal. And he paid his time. He went and served jail time for that. And he was let back into the league. Was that good enough? Should he have been let back into the league? What he did was illegal. I could name a million others, but Michael Vick being one of those really popular guys, it was still pretty damn good when he came back. He served his time. What John Gruden did, not illegal, at least from what we know, at least at this stage. So I'll admit, some of you that are really flipping out about it, I get it. On the other side, saying, well, why are there guys that have committed committed crimes, whether they paid for them or they were just let off or there were charges weren't pressed? I mean, all that kind of stuff. And yet here this situation is, well, Gruden again resigned. Was he forced to resign? Again, that's not popping out just yet. So if it was his choice to resign, then that conversation dies. That goes away quickly. If it comes out soon, which maybe it will, that he was more or less forced to resign. But you also have to ask this question. Donald Sterling, the Clippers owner. What he did was not illegal, but it was detrimental to the NBA, meaning you were having fans threaten boycott. You were having players threaten boycott. It was detrimental to the league. Was what Gruden did detrimental to the league? I believe so, based on the information we have right now without the emails in front of us. So if you want to do that, yes, there's stuff that happens. Guys do things that, you know, they commit crimes, whatever. Is it detrimental to the league? Indirectly, perhaps. But what Donald Sterling did when he was recorded saying those terrible things that he said and what it looks like Gruden did, those things are directly detrimental to the league. Both things talking about people in the leagues, higher ups in the leagues, where to the point where you say, these guys aren't going to play for you. The fans aren't going to show up for you. And that's detrimental to the league. 33 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Prep Sports and the UNC Bears are on Northern Colorado's voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Christopher Dempsey, your Nuggets insider from Altitude Sports, and you are listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back to The Whole Show. We're powered by PDC Energy. Joining us now, as he does on Tuesdays right around this time, with CSURams.com and RamWire insider Mike Brohard. Mike, that environment on Saturday was really cool, man. And it just kind of shows you what Canvas Stadium could really be. As you said last week, that whole day, though, for CSU Athletics was a pretty exciting day.
I thought it was a great day. It really... The student section has been tremendous this year. I mean, starting off with 12,000 kids showing up, that was a record at CSU from the student section that very first game. I think it shows that, you know, this group, I mean, we talked about it earlier. We had two classes of students on campus, the sophomores and freshmen, who'd never seen a live college event, and they keep coming, and they're sticking it out, and they're wild, and they're rowdy, and they're creating their own little, you know, groups among themselves, like the hard hat group. It's been an electric atmosphere, and obviously the players love it, and they hope to see it keep coming.
Mike, what is it then exactly? I mean, because I know, hey, fans are really excited to get out. Canvas Stadium is absolutely elite as far as, you know, just the facility that it is. What is it, man? I mean, is it all these things just coming together? And I like what you just said. You're getting student groups kind of creating these new traditions, so to speak. Can you put your thumb on what exactly is happening?
I've thought about it a lot, and I think it's a lot of little things. I think you have a group that's happy to be fully living the college experience for what it is and not taking online classes and going out and meeting people and being around other people. I think there's a lot of that. I talked to some of the student-athletes on other teams, and they were like, we just want to go back and support our other teams again because we haven't been able to do that for a year. I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, Saturday before the football game, you know, I was over at the men's basketball screenings, and I think there was about 500 to 1,000 people there just to watch the basketball team scrimmage, and they thought it was great. They got into it. So I think it's just a chance for us in society, us as a community, to get back around each other, try and do it in the safest way possible, but just enjoy being together and cheering for a common goal, which is, you know, success for our teams here at Colorado State.
Yeah, and all those things you just said, I agree with. Plus, you look at the last 2 weeks leading up to that for the football side. Obviously, the basketball side. I mean, my goodness, everyone's so excited looking at some of the national way too early rankings and stuff. It's definitely a fun time to be a Rams basketball fan. But you know, we had talked about it, the Toledo win, going toe to toe with Iowa. Those things kind of leading into it. Maybe even taking the student section away. Just the other fans, they're looking at it going, all right, this Rams team might be putting something together.
Yeah, and the homecoming weekend is always special.
Sure.
I think, you know, you didn't get one of those really last year, so the chance to come back and do that was obviously part of it. But, you know, the crowds have been spectacular. And I think also, I mean, we all, I think, like college football in the afternoon, and a Saturday afternoon kickoff in October was, man, it was just perfect. It was just great weather, and it was all that. And now you're starting to see a football team play well. They're getting a ground game going. You know, Caden Camper sets a record with making all six of his field goals. You got a defense that is still playing really well, and now it's creating turnovers. There's some excitement. I mean, they're ready to go down into New Mexico and go for something they haven't had for a while, and that's back-to-back conference wins and a win streak.
Yeah, and then we'd kind of keep them up at the top. It's nice for a week, Mike, just to see it up at the top of the Mountain West Mountain standings. You mentioned Caden Camper, though. Talk about that turnaround. You go to the Vanderbilt game, and it was a tough go for him, but some tough practices. I know, as you told us, you know, they're just trying to distract him when he's kicking. They're messing with him. It just seems like this team, though, was 100% behind him, and I know we can easily say that, but it really felt like that, just talking to some of the players, and look at that phenomenal turnaround he's had the last few games.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. Like Steve Adazio says, it's love and trust, and I think you saw that with Camper. I was joking with Tadpole. I told him that Camper was now the pride of Puebla. now he wants to know how many punt returns he has to have in a game to steal that final back. But I thought it was interesting. So Camper said, when I talked to Caden about it, he said, you know, he thought it was odd when they started yelling at him and throwing stuff at him and, you know, popping him with pads and things, because that's never going to happen in a game. But he did say that it made him focus on the kick. And he also had to make an adjustment. So he felt he was standing too far back on his heels, and that was leading him to rush through his kicks, which had him off. So he made a minor adjustment. He's up on his toes with his, you know, his kicking foot behind his plant foot. And he says he doesn't feel rushed anymore. And he said also talking to Stonehouse was really good for him. And Stonehouse is somebody to go if you want to know information from somebody that has had success, that knows consistency. And Stonehouse just convinced him to stay true to your form and just step back and rip it. And that was obviously really good advice for him. Caden said it helped him get his confidence back up, and now he's 11 of 11. So that's a pretty good run.
It's phenomenal. It really is. And, I mean, I'm looking – I can't put my finger on the number. There was a lot of missed kicks in the NFL this weekend, Mike. So I think, you know, maybe they could have used Caden Camper a little bit. Hey, Ryan Stonehouse had a punt, and it ultimately was muffed. The Rams recovered. I can't recall, Mike, if that was in the first half. Stonehouse did that on purpose, right? The ball looked really wobbly, and I thought when it was high in the air, I'm thinking, that looks like it's going to be really difficult to catch. And it was. And you have to to think, with as good as Stonehouse is, that was 100% on purpose, right?
Some of it, yeah. So let's put it this way. One thing that Stonehouse does that most people don't, he has a different drop than I would say 98% of the punters in the league. And it stems back from, you know, the guy that taught his uncle and his father, who were both really successful punters in college, how to punt. And it's a different drop. And it's one that Goody here, who controls, you know, special team quality control coach, he wouldn't teach to anybody because he doesn't know it. It's very rare. Very few people do it. But it can give Ryan some control on the ball and kind of how it spins and what he can make it do. And, yeah, it doesn't work all the time. But the way it comes off his foot, it's not always easy. And I think it gets amplified because, if you remember correctly, during that game, the wind was gusting pretty good at that time too. And so you get a ball up in the air and it's already spinning. It's going to, you know, those RPMs, I think you talked about spin rate with a pitcher pitch. It gets kind of the same thing with a kick.
How about, let's go over to Todd Senteo. That, I mean, it was just so cool to see him put together a nice game like that, 19 of 23, 232 yards. He had the touchdown. But, of course, I think what was really refreshing to see, and I think hopefully a big confidence booster, was him connecting on one of those deep balls.
Yeah, the pass to Ty McCall for the 60-yard touchdown was real big. It was for him. It was also big for Ty, who's been, you know, trying to make those kind of plays. They've been trying to get him to do that. But what was most impressive to me was, that was a 3rd and 10 play. And he kept his composure, he waited for that play to develop, and he threw a perfect strike to Ty. And then I was joking with Ty. I said, you know, it's about time you showed your speed. And he said that his teammates were telling him he's still slow, so we'll see how that goes. But he looked like he had some pretty good goals on that. And he made the right move. But no, that's an important play for the offense because they need to be more explosive. You need, for that run game to work, you need to have a vertical threat. You don't have to hit 10 of them a game. You just have to have the threat that you can hit them, and now you have.
New Mexico's lost their last four games, including kind of, you know, getting knocked around by San Diego State 31-7, which isn't a huge surprise there. It's an interesting weekend, Mike. We're going from the last few weeks, the Rams were underdogs. San Jose State, they were a favorite, but I still think, you know, people were skeptical. This one you're looking at going, man, the Rams, we're going back to where we were week one or two. Feels like the Rams should win this one, and dare I say, rather easily.
They should. History's on their side. They've won this matchup 10 straight times. They've had New Mexico's number no matter who the coach was. It's interesting now, back at New Mexico, you got Rocky Long as your defensive coordinator, so he brings that funky defense to him. I don't think they're completely adept at running his defensive set yet, obviously, from watching them play and looking at what the numbers have been. But, yeah, this is a team that they're still trying to get their bearings together. They had it probably tougher than Colorado State did in some regards last year because, for the most part, they couldn't even play in their home state. They moved to Vegas for a while. I don't know that they've gotten a whole lot of established under Danny Gonzalez, so there's still a work in progress. But, yeah, this is a game. Colorado State should be favored, but they've got to take the approach. It's a one-week season for them. They have to go into improve still some other things. This is not a complete Colorado State team by any means yet. They know it. They're still trying to improve. And they can't just go into this game down in Albuquerque and go, we beat them 10 times, we're going to do it again. They're going to have to work at it. They're going to have to earn it. They're going to have to listen to more impressive than they have.
Mike, what do you got for us that we can check out today, maybe a little bit later in the week at CSURams.com?
Working on a piece right now on the offensive line. I thought it was interesting. I mean, they lost Vincent Picozzi to a season-ending injury. You saw Barry Wesley move back inside. He started every game of his college career, but he was back in at guard. Keith Williams made his first start at tackle. And to me, it shows some development on that offensive line. So 3 out of 4 games, they rushed for 200 yards. And the fact that they were able to make an adjustment to their starting five and still keep it going, and with a backup running back in Ajon Bivens on that clear game, it shows that offensive line is making strides to the kind of group that it wants to be. And I just think it's interesting development.
Yeah, well, we'll see if they can keep it rolling, man. Like you said, a great environment Saturday, getting a couple of games on the road. We'll see if they come back to a really electric home crowd. Mike, always appreciate you, my friend.
You bet. You take care.
All right, man. Mike Brohard, CSURams.com and RamWire Insider. We'll take a short break. We'll wrap up the show. Coming back, we'll get closing thoughts, look at some Major League Baseball scores for you when we come back.
Southern Colorado's voice and your home for the Denver Broncos is 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. For the latest on the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Rockies, listen to the Hull Show weekdays at noon on Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Harrison Wynn with DNVR Nuggets. You're listening to the Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Good air guitar. Feels good sometimes. All right, we have to crown a winner. Dixon's kind of right on this one. It's been kind of one of those blah days, except Bama Bear gets this one. We're going to go that route. Congratulations. Bama Bear, you did what no one could do today, and that's win Top Text Tuesday on this 12th day of October. Oh boy, I was just looking at the score. We got the Astros just went up 3-1. Last I checked, it was 1-0. That game is on FS1 right now. They're in the top of the fourth. Brewers and Braves going at it at 3:15 tonight. Giants and Dodgers. San Francisco leads that series 2-1. So hey, a night of baseball. No football for the next 2 days. So you get some baseball in. It's going to do it for us. It is Tuesday. Stick around for Pick Central coming up. And the Good Afternoon Guy with Brian Gary. Good night, Northern Colorado.